Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, how's it rolling?
It's rolling great. Mets are 7-1. Just got to hang out with you a couple times in a week.
Yeah, you are not. You're not a goer of places.
True.
In fact, you're not even a leaver of your house at all. So.
True. But I am an eater of food. So, like, people can get me to go places by promising lunch or dinner.
Yeah. Did I get lunch when we saw each other yesterday?
Or breakfast. I don't know. You got something, didn't you?
No, I got nothing. Akiva was so focused on his food, he didn't even notice.
You know, first of all, focused. I was paying for it. But
well, no, we were paying for it, to be fair.
But time out. I don't get any credit because I
you don't get any credit because I didn't get any food.
Time out. All right. So we went out to with a couple listeners and us went out. We had gone out like 10 days ago, just the two of us. But we went out to more of a brunch type thing with four people, at least I thought it'd be four people, but then your whole family was in the area, so you brought your oldest son to lunch, and then he was bored, and then a lot happened. Okay, so first of all, Chester tells the most inappropriate story I've ever heard. Like, you cannot, it was like a crowd, it wasn't such a crowded restaurant, but like there's people above you in the restaurant on like another level, and he's yelling the word.
But it was a great story.
It was a great story. All right, so here's a couple problems. You don't have any control of your voice. Like, you should have been whispering it. It made everyone else uncomfortable that, like,
reason I was telling the story.
Yeah. And then, and like, also, you don't know your crowd, because at least one of those guys did not want to hear that story at all.
Again, why I told it.
But, no, it was
Are you referring to the rabbi?
There was no rabbi at our table.
Oh, you didn't know my co-owner's a rabbi?
Oh, I had no idea. Oh, that makes your story even worse. I can't believe.
No, that was the whole purpose.
His virgin ears have now heard that. Oh my! He'll never.
It was shocking awe. Shocking awe.
I didn't realize that. No, that was. You can't tell that story on the podcast, but maybe if we had like a Patreon, I feel like that would be like the $25 a month level.
We do have an explicit content warning, but
that's true. Maybe we'll tell it in the Facebook group, but so you tell that story, and we also ordered Chester and I at like. Ordered the exact same thing,
and you know how against that I am.
Yeah, but we weren't going to share. Like I eat all my food, and then I look
weasel.
Around.
You're such a weasel. If I had known you would order the same thing as me, I would have changed my order on the spot.
What do you think you were going to share my salmon pad thai or whatever? I like.
Have we never discussed? You know how vehemently I'm against people at the table ordering the same thing.
Yeah, but I'm not like I'm going to eat all my food, and then I'm going to eat everyone else's leftovers. That's how I roll.
It's not that I'm eating your food. It's that I don't. Anyways, the point is that if you had not whispered secretly your order to the waiter, I would have canceled my order on the spot.
I mean, you were dealing with your son. So then we ordered the same thing. 15 minutes later, the guy comes back and is like, oh, yeah, we don't have it. So now
we
have to
reorder. I thought he was talking to me, and then I found out he's talking to both of us. So it was a blessing in disguise. Because if they had ordered two of the same thing at the menu at the table, I would have walked out.
You would have walked out if we both got our food, you're saying. So it was good that they didn't have our food.
I would have taken your food and thrown it at you, and then there would have been.
What if they only had one, and like they just gave me, and then it's like a double.
That's fine. I would rather take my second choice than have my first choice.
So now you're telling these inappropriate stories, so your son is getting like really antsy. So I give him my phone, because I'm like, I'm basically his uncle now.
He didn't know it was fine.
I know, obviously he wasn't going to understand the story, but he also, like, didn't want to be there. So, I happen to hate kids, but, like, I was actually really good. I do think I'm his uncle, essentially, now. And so, you have to get your kids more into sports. Like, I said, I wanted to show him, like, sports videos on my phone. I'm like, what do you like? Or thing he'd want, like, PJ Masks or Paw Patrol. He's like, I like planets.
Yeah, he's very into planets.
I mean, he's going to get bullied. Like, you better watch out. Like, when he's four. Planets aren't cool until you're, like, unless you, like, go to
something. Planets are the same thing as dinosaurs in that if you have, like, a chart showing, like, your knowledge of those topics over mm-hmm. time of your life, there's, yeah. like, a sharp incline that sort of peaks at around age 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And then a very sharp decline after. Like, I know significantly less about dinosaurs or planets.
Sure, yeah.
Than
yeah.
Any,
4-year-olds
just
know
about
any
7-year-old on Earth.
No question.
Yeah.
So that's
for
fair.
Sure.
Yeah, but you got to wean him off the planets and the dice.
Yeah, there's actually there's a dwarf planet named Eris, he told me, actually.
Oh, so he really is all in. on the planet.
I fact checked it. It's spelled differently, but it is correct.
That's,
is correct.
So he must go on some real YouTube binges of planet stuff. So then we don't get our food. Then I get my food, but I end up giving, I think,
hold on. So we change our orders, and my new order never arrives.
Never comes. We're there for like another hour. Never comes. I get the wrong thing. Now
three generations of Chesters come to the table.
Yes. Yeah, Jerry Chester comes. Fern comes. My arch enemy Jennifer comes to the table, who is not interested in anything I have to say. Looks at me with such a scowl. I try and tell her that how like appreciative she should be that she has a husband who's like so good with the kids. And like if I was going with my friends, I wouldn't have like taken some of the kids, and I would have made her walk around with all of mine. And like that you're so helpful. And she's like, you're just making yourself look bad. Like you think you're bragging about how bad you are, but really you're like, no, I'm trying to like compliment your husband. She can't even hear something good about you. She's only has hate in her heart. And so your food never comes. I get the wrong thing. Now me and you are in the same boat here. We're not sent back. I clearly ordered like a pizza with like lots of fancy things on it. They brought me the most boring plain
pizza.
First of
all, okay, a couple of things here. You have to be criticized. You did a very bad job. The waiter comes back, and remember, he's talking in a second language to us. The waiter comes back and tells us that the thing that we both ordered apparently is not available.
Mm.
He offers to bring back the menu, which I take to look at. You, without looking at the menu, say, oh, no, I just want one of the pizzas. Which one is it exactly? Oh, it was the one I think it had artichoke or something like that. And he's like, okay, yeah, that one. That's what you said. You made reference to one
see,
of the
I could
that are,
I could reorder without specific. A menu because yeah, I like had a second place and a third place and a fourth place for what I wanted to order.
But you didn't. But you vaguely said one of the pizzas that had artichoke.
I said the name of it too.
No, you didn't say the name because you didn't know what it was.
Anyway, I got the wrong thing. It ruined my whole meal. I literally had to come home and eat. I gave your sons my pizza, like the hero I am. And then you never got food. You end up leaving. Your wife ends up just totally like sneering at me 20 more times.
Yeah, and then I never got food ever. Like the one thing I really wanted is I really wanted to get a quality Israel, you know, falafel, mm-hmm. and I never got to get it because then we didn't have time because of this whole delay at the restaurant. We went to the Old City. We never had time for my falafel, so that was a big loss on my part.
Good
and then
you
think
food.
I could get one at the airport, but yeah,
there's no good falafel at the airport.
I know, but it's still better than nothing, and I didn't even get that. So
yeah,
big loss.
And did you get any sleep on the plane home with three children?
Yeah, the flight back was actually very good.
Okay.
We left at 8. We left at like 8 p.m. We arrived. We got back home at 3 a.m. this morning. So you know.
And you went straight to work? You like slept for 3 hours and went to work?
One would think I slept for 3 hours instead of my charts, but yeah.
Oh my god! All right. Yeah. So let's. This is sort of a chart type of episode. So let's get into it.
It's funny, yeah. So what you wanted to do with this episode is the kind of thing that I've proposed in the past, and you've completely dismissed. Nobody wants to hear about random athletes that only you know about because of your charts, is the kind of thing you would say to me.
Right, but I think we're only doing 10, we're not doing 100, and I think people will be interested in hearing about, this will be like a history episode. This is like Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, but for sports fans.
Yeah.
And it's 10 sort of forgotten athletes who people don't remember, but they were once great, and they flamed out, and we'll explain... You know,
well,
how great
they
were.
Tell me about the email you sent me last week that started this.
Oh, I don't know. I just said, oh, okay.
The John Jefferson email.
Okay, fine.
You sent that to me completely out of nowhere, a non-sequitur.
Yeah, so Aaron Schatz posted, and I'll, how about this? So just we're each going to give, I don't know if you followed my rules, but these are going to be 10 athletes. We're each going to do 5. I'm going to do one from baseball, football, basketball, and hockey, and then one from other. And
well,
I don't know if
on
you're
going to... Let's step back a second. So you sent me an email 6 days ago.
Yeah.
Subject line, John Jefferson, complete mm-hmm. non sequitur. And you're the body of your email is fascinating career, one of the best first three seasons, one of the best first three season players in NFL history, ? Have a chart, ? With a link to his Pro Football Reference page.
Yes.
So I responded to you. So I have these charts, which I may have mentioned, I am sure I've mentioned in the podcast in passing, which I sort of update from year to year. I had one called like the Joe Mauer Project and one the Mike Trout Project and one the Antonio Brown Project, the Adrian
Peterson
Project.
What's you name all these charts?
Yeah, the name of the chart is the player I'm talking. What I do is each season at the end of the season for various players who are earlier in their career but show potential to be sort of all-time greats of their position based on, you know, the first couple years of their career is I look, you know, you can't say where does Antonio Brown line up among all receivers or where does Clayton Kershaw line up among all-time pitchers when they've only played a couple of seasons. So instead I say through that age. So every year I update the chart. So through age 25.
It's always age, not how many seasons they've played.
I've gone back and forth on it, and age makes more sense because if you're projecting where a guy's going to end up in his career, what's more relevant is age, right?
I kind of disagree because I think, especially with running backs in particular, I think like how much miles you have is probably more relevant to how many seasons you've been in the league, but I hear the dilemma. I would probably go with how many seasons you've played.
Yeah, well, it makes more sense to do the age, especially like Mike Trout, so I'm going to, you know, whatever. Anyways.
You know what? I would probably do baseball age and football seasons.
Yeah, anyway. So I have these charts, which I update every year for sort of active stars. I think I even did one for David Wright at one point among third basemen. But, you know, he sort of petered out, obviously.
Okay, so, yeah. So Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders wrote, you know, but how, you know, said, oh, this guy had a fascinating career. And I did a deep dive into John Jefferson. So just, like, I'll talk about John Jefferson now, but also he is my football guy. Like, I'm not doing research on two different people. So yeah. We'll start, and these aren't in order. These are just, this is not like 10 through 1 or 1 through 10. These are just like, you know, one per sport for me, and you probably did 5 baseball or 5 football or something. I have no idea. But so John Jefferson gets picked 14th in the NFL draft in the first round by the Chargers. Their highest wide receiver pick ever until they picked the bust Mike Williams last year, as opposed to like the 5 other Mike Williams busts from the last 2 decades. So in John Jefferson's first year in the league, in only 14 games, he goes for 56 for over 1,000 yards and 13 touchdowns. He has 5 separate multi-touchdown games in 1978. So he goes absolutely bananas. Year 2, 61 for 1,090 and 10 touchdowns. And then year 3, he finally plays 16 games, and he goes 82 for a league-high 1,340 yards and has a league-high 13 touchdown catches. So he has gone.
And you have to point out that this offense, the Eric Coryell offense with him and Dan Fouts, I mean, they're like revolutionizing the game in those
times. Right. I mean, obviously, the type of person who's listening to this and paying attention knows, like, these are late 70s, early 80s stats, like pre-Marino. These are cartoon numbers that nobody else was doing. He would have been probably, without looking at it, you know, after the second time he did this, probably like the 3rd pick in a fantasy draft or something for the next year. Just absolutely ridiculous numbers. It was him and Kellen Winslow and Charlie Joiners.
So just to put this in context of how good he was, I went ahead and did the first 3 seasons of career versus instead of age to give Jefferson the advantage because he was a little bit older when he started. And I ranked him the 5th best wide receiver in NFL history through the first 3 seasons of his career behind Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, Odell Beckham Jr., and Bob Hayes. So 3 Hall of Famers and 1, you know, who the Patriots are going to trade 2 first picks for, and then he'll be a Super Hall of Famer.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
He's on a great trajectory.
This is a guy who nobody's ever heard of, right? And Charlie Joiner is also a sort of forgotten player, and he's at the end of his career, but he also has over 1,100 yards. They have 3 guys that year with over 1,130 yards and a combined 26 touchdowns. They didn't have much of a running game. They were called Eric Coryell, right? They really didn't run the ball much. They passed. So now Jefferson holds out because he's become a superstar and he's still making, you know, rookie money. He holds out in the summer of 1981, and eventually the Chargers decide to trade him. And what they trade him for is an unbelievable haul. They get a first-round pick. In the next 3 years, they get a first-round pick. In the other 2 years, they get to flip their first-round pick with the Packers, who at that point were like going 5-11, 6-10 a lot. So in theory, you could be flipping the 20th pick for the 10th pick. And then they get 2 second-round picks. So that's a first, 2 seconds, 2 flips, and like a decent receiver to replace Jefferson. And Jefferson's now going to play with James Lofton, who the listeners who are our age will probably remember more as sort of the number 2 with Andre Reed at the end of his career with the Bills. So after 3 years of 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, as you could guess based on the premise of the podcast, John Jefferson completely falls off the map. His first year with the Packers, he has only 39 catches and 4 touchdowns. His second year with the Packers, he does not score a touchdown, only has 27 catches. He has one more okay year with 57 catches, 7 touchdowns, but then never scores again. And it's completely he switches to the Browns in 85, and before he turns 30, is completely out of the league, despite, as you said, being one of the 5 best receivers ever through the first 3 seasons of his career.
Yeah, so as I said, through 3 years, 5th on my chart. Would you like to guess where he appears on my chart all-time for his entire career as an NFL wide receiver?
Well, his total numbers, he only has 47 touchdowns, and which is okay, and he only has 350 catches, which is garbage, 5,700 yards. So I'm going to guess 197.
Yeah, he's not even in the top 125, which is where the chart ends.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you probably around right. He's probably
all-time. Yeah, so that's why this is a really good example of the way I interpreted this podcast, which is I went ahead and searched basically through age 25 careers of players, and then I looked for guys who through age 25 was really good and then sort of disappeared. By the way, on that receiver chart I sent you, there's a lot of other guys who, like Jefferson, who started out really hot and then disappeared. Dave Parks on the 49ers in the 60s, Otis Taylor on the Chiefs in the 60s, Percy Harvin on the Vikings, who, you know, was really good, and you know, his career's done. But not
was
as
Percy Harvin in the league this past year.
No, he washed out of Buffalo, and I think he's done now.
So Jefferson, a lot of these guys you think like would just fade away, but John Jefferson actually like becomes an assistant coach, works his way up like really high into the Redskins organization, and becomes their you know, one of their like player personnel guys. And then at this point now he's 62 and he's out of football, but actually did stay around in football for a while. It doesn't seem like it was an injury that derailed him. I think maybe ultimately he was just a system player and that anybody who played with Fouts in that offense was going to be great. Yeah, John Jefferson is my football guy. Do you want to do – we're going to do 1-1-1-1, right? I'm not going to do 5 and then you're going to do 5.
Okay, so I'll tell you who I have for a football guy. So, again, the way I did this is I basically looked up guys who through age 25 – were sort of superstars and then fell off the cliff. And actually, I only have one in baseball and in basketball, but I had three in football. So the first one I have is Larry Eisenhower.
Mm. A lot of
people
say
Larry Eisenhower. So Larry Eisenhower was he's my number 62 all-time defensive end. So, you know, a solid career. But the key point here is he was the best defensive player in the AFL from 1962 to 1964, which is ages 22 to 24. During that three-year span, he led all AFL defensive players in approximate value, which is the football version of WAR. He was one of only two AFL defensive players to be named first-team All-Pro all three of those years. And then after age 24, his performance falls off a cliff. And I really couldn't find any explanation for this. I did see his nickname was Wild Man, and some of his antics were he ran onto the Chiefs' snow-covered field before a game in nothing but his helmet and his jockstrap, and he would routinely hit his head on metal locker doors to motivate himself.
Ooh, I wonder why he's also Long Island exactly. Guy. Born in Hicksville, went to Menial High.
A Gus Frat situation. So, so his career sort of falls off a cliff. So Larry Eisenhower, you know, had a really good start, and then, you know, but I would also guess that he was, you know, a 215-pound white guy who probably would not have lasted in other.
No, areas. He's listed as 250, so he must have been an enormous for that day.
Oh yeah, that's pretty big. Yeah, he's not a tackle; he's an end. So I mean, ends today even are 250.
He's still around. I see on YouTube he got interviewed on some New England station in just a couple of years ago at the Super Bowl. So.
All right, so he's still living off those Patriots
years. Oh, wow. So you know what? He's got a crazy ponytail. He must – you know what? He's definitely, like, walking around, like, sleeping with people's stepmoms. Like, this guy, Larry
Eisenhower. Well, he's wild, man. We said he's wild.
Yeah, he's still a wild man.
Yeah. Okay, good for Larry Eisenhower, and he's getting a shout-out on the podcast. Maybe he's a listener. Larry,
again, this could be – this isn't the best podcast, but it could be the only one to have ever mentioned Larry Eisenhower.
Yeah, well, he's got to be – I'm sure he's been interviewed on some Patriots podcast during Super Bowl week or something. If he's like hanging out at the Super Bowl. Anyway, the other guys I have on my list are all running backs. It's sort of unfair to include running backs because, as we said, like a running back falling off a cliff in his later 20s isn't unusual. It's sort of standard. Mm-hmm. But there are two running backs I want to highlight. So the first one is Ray Rice. We know the Ray Rice story. You know, we also know that a lot of people said the reason teams weren't willing to give him another chance is because his on-field performance wouldn't offer the potential to overcome the tsuris, as our people would say, that would come to the team that signed him, unlike, you know, Michael Vick, for example. And it is true that in his final season, 2013, at age 26, far and away the worst year of his career in every single stat, his yards per carry, which was 4.5 up till that point, dropped to 3.1, which is literal garbage, as you'd like to say.
But yeah, he was only 5.5 as a receiver. Like he was an amazing receiver and his receptions.
But let's not forget how good he was before that 2013 season. So through age 25, his first 5 years of his career, Ray, I looked at – this is not just running backs. This is every position in football. Through age 25, Ray Rice has the second highest AV of all time among non-Hall of Fame NFL players, excluding, you know, active guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame, behind only Edgerrin James, who I've mentioned on this podcast many times. To me, is a no-brainer Hall of Famer. In those first 5 years in the league, Ray Rice was basically every year 2,000 yards from scrimmage, 1,300 rushing yards, 65 catches. I would say that he was almost slightly underrated because, from a fantasy perspective, he didn't have as many touchdowns. Like his rookie season, he had no touchdowns. And over the course of those 5 years, he was third in the league in yards from scrimmage behind Adrian Peterson and Chris Johnson, but only 13th in touchdowns. So I think because he didn't score as many touchdowns, he was a little underrated. But he was like just a supremely good player, and he was really the offense for the Ravens, and those were, you know, very good Ravens teams. And so Ray Rice, you know, drags his wife and.
But
know,
now, wait, hold on. We said this is going to be flameouts, but also forgotten stars. Now Ray Rice is not forgotten. He may in 30 okay. years, you may say,
okay,
"Oh,
so
this
the,
guy
right,
was
so
great."
The, okay, so then I have one. Okay, so then I have one other running back I want to mention. And this
wait, so
is
he one of your five? Though I don't understand.
I don't, what's my five? I have one. I have three football players to talk about. One baseball player. One basketball. One.
So he's
player,
one of your
basketball.
Five. You're going to do your last football sure. player now. So you're saying Ray Rice, who's still extremely famous, is forgotten.
Again, the way I interpreted this is what you did with John Jefferson. I looked at players who were elite through age 25 and then dropped off a cliff.
Okay.
Whether or not they're remembered or forgotten, hopefully in this podcast. And Ray Rice is not really remembered as a football player. He's remembered as a guy who beat his wife and was caught on videotape.
Mm. And so you're trying to bring back that he should mostly be remembered as a football player.
Well, no, if we're going to be honest here, what Ray Rice did, as abhorrent and disgusting as it was, there are many football players who do much worse things. The difference in his case was that there was videotape.
I don't know. We were out of the picture a lot this weekend, but I don't know if you followed any of the Conor McGregor stuff or if you even heard about it.
I heard he like threw something at some like
yeah. He attacked. Basically, he attacked a bus full of fighters, and so Dana White, who you know is like a low rent Vince McMahon, except probably richer, and he needs to sort of justify.
People thought it was faked.
No, he needs to justify that, like, McGregor is not so bad because he needs McGregor is his only star because Ronda Rousey is in the WWE and they have not been able to develop any more stars. So he needs to pretend, like, that it's not a big deal. So he literally went on ESPN or Fox Sports and said, like, in every other sport they do things way worse. So he said, in every other sport they do things way worse than, like, attack the other team before the game?
So I'm as guilty
send three
as
players on the other team to the
so
hospital.
I'm guilty of the same whataboutism is what you're saying.
I mean it was crazy. Like
okay, fine. I have one other running back I want to talk about. This is sure. a guy who I do not. If I were to mention the name Larry Brown to you, if I were to poll 1,000 sports fans, who's Larry Brown? What percentage would say he's the basketball coach? What's going on in the background? You have a conference?
There's a bunch of women coming in here.
All right.
I don't know what's going on.
They heard we were talking about Ray Rice, so. I don't know where I'm going with that.
No, I want to say a joke.
Well, my daughter came in and said she won't leave unless we let her say a joke.
Okay, let's hear a joke from your daughter.
Well, come here. Come say your joke.
Wait, should I tell her about my brother's story?
No, this is my 12-year-old daughter. This is Chester, Ella. Say hi to the, speak
hi.
Into the mic, Ella.
Hi.
Ella, let's hear your joke.
Hello?
Ella, just remember, this podcast is for all audiences.
Yeah, don't make
it
inappropriate. Okay. What's your joke?
Okay.
I'm nervous.
How many, what's it called, and how many steps do you put an elephant into the fridge?
How many steps does it take to put an elephant into the fridge?
Yeah.
How many? How many
Wait,
steps? Are
I'm
you answering?
Him. I'm asking him. Chester.
Chester, answer the question.
I'm trying to think of some kind of trunk pun. I don't know.
Just make up a number.
Just guess.
Four.
Just get her out of here.
Three. How many do you put a giraffe into the fridge?
Wait, I think you have to explain first.
Oh, right. You need to open the fridge, put it in, and then close the fridge. Okay. How
Wait,
many
you're
do you put
the fridge, close, putting the elephant in the fridge.
And then closing
the
How
fridge.
Many do okay. you put the giraffe in the fridge?
How many steps? Oh, you're really butchering this joke that you already practiced.
Okay. I don't
three.
Practice.
Okay, three.
No, four. Because you need to open the fridge, take the elephant out, then put the giraffe in, then close it.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh,
I was saying
right. Okay. Are you done?
Okay, there was
Give
a
me something
meeting.
Different.
No.
Give me something different.
Fine. A different joke. There was a meeting in the zoo. What animal did not come?
The aardvark.
No, the giraffe. He's in the fridge.
Oh, yes, yes. Good point.
Okay.
You're crushing it.
Okay. Stop. You see, he's beat to me. Okay. Then. Oh, and he always talks about you, Chester.
All right. Go.
Okay.
Keep going.
His life is Chester. He goes, can I talk to Chester? Can I go see Chester?
All right, go.
Okay. You're embarrassing your father.
I don't care. Okay. Okay.
Last joke.
Fine. A man wanted to cross the river. It said, do not pass. There's alligators. He crossed the you'll die. He passed the river. Why did he not die?
The alligators were in the fridge with the giraffe.
No, the alligators are at the meeting. Ha ha
oh,
ha.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot. Right,
okay, bye. You see?
All right, bye.
Not bad.
All right, go out. Should
great
least,
interlude.
Just, close the door. Oh, my God.
All right. Okay. So we were talking about Larry Brown. Yeah. Who is Larry Brown, Akiva? You're a sports fan. Tell me who he is.
Larry Brown was the Super Bowl MVP.
Okay. So, okay. But most people know Larry Brown is the basketball coach.
Oh, well, we're talking about football players, though. Hello, no, this is not a party where everyone can just come in here.
What is
Hello, Chester. I
want to
say hello,
Chester. All right. Say hello to
Chester. Hello, Chester.
Hello. Hello.
He's not answering me.
Abba, mommy's calling you. Right,
guys, go out. Mara, get these guys out of here.
Hi, hi.
What is going on here? All right, Akiva. So if you were to poll 100 sports fans and ask them, who's Larry Brown, what would 99% of them say?
99 sports fans would say the coach who never stayed anywhere for more than 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. So you, because you're a Super Bowl expert, you know who Larry Brown, the running back, was.
No, Larry Brown, the cornerback.
Okay, so then you don't know who Larry Brown is. Good. Okay, fine. So you were referring to Larry Brown on the Cowboys in the 90s when I said
yeah,
football.
Super Bowl 30 MVP Larry Brown. I don't know which Larry Brown you're talking about.
I'm talking about the greatest Larry Brown that there is, which is the running back.
I mean, there's probably like an accountant Larry Brown who's like the third best accountant in the world. He's probably the greatest Larry Brown.
All right. The first five seasons of career among NFL running backs. Can I give you the rankings of approximate value?
Give me.
Number one, Thurman Thomas, Hall of Famer. Number two, Emmitt Smith, Hall of Famer. Number three, LaDainian Tomlinson, Hall of Famer. Number four, Chuck Foreman on the Vikings in the 70s, who career was a little bit cut short. I would pick him, but I'm not being a homer. And tied for fifth is Larry Brown. Larry Brown in 1972 was, and by the way, Larry Brown is tied for fifth with William Andrews on this list, who's another guy we could mention. But he's not a guy, his career was only 5 years long, but it's not that he fell off a cliff. It's that he didn't join the NFL until age 24, so his career ended at a normal age.
I didn't include a lot of guys like that. There were baseball players who start too late also.
Yeah, there's another Billy Sims on the Lions was the same era as William Andrews, similar circumstance. Anyway, so tied for fifth is Larry Brown. Larry Brown, in his fourth season in the NFL at age 24, he was the unanimous MVP of the NFL, led the league in yards, best player in the league by virtually any metric, led the league in approximate value. His Washington team went to the Super Bowl where they lost the undefeated Dolphins. And in the playoffs that year, he was not the Super Bowl MVP, but you know he was very good. He had over 100 yards in each of the first two playoff games. He had 98 yards in the Super Bowl. They lost because Billy Kilmer had 104 yards passing and three interceptions. Anyway, the next year, at age 26, he leads the league in touchdowns, and then after that, his career immediately fizzles out. So he's still number 58 on my all-time running backs list, which is okay, but that's nowhere near the Hall of Fame. And Larry Brown is the only non-active, non-quarterback MVP not in the Hall of Fame other than Mark Mosley, the troll kicker who was named MVP in 1982 for shtick. So to be a Hall of Famer, to be a Pro Bowler, to be the MVP of the NFL and not be a Hall of Famer is very unusual. Larry Brown was just an incredibly good running back whose career was basically done after age 26.
Age 25, his career is done.
Age 26, he led the league in touchdowns.
Year 25 season. But right, his yards per carry the last 4 years of his career as opposed to the first 4 years, 3.2, 2.6, 3.6, 2.8. Not great.
Not great. Well, that's why his career ended. All right, so those are my football guys. I had a little more football than I had other sports, but which sport are we going to next?
Let's go to hockey, because I have one from every sport. So, this is we're big hockey guys on this podcast. So
hockey, I'm a hockey expert, yeah.
So Jim Carrey, the goalie, speaking of people with famous names, in 1995 puts up a 2.13 goals against average. Out of nowhere. He's a rookie. He's a backup. But, now it's like, it was more of a joke. Like, hi, Ace Ventura's around. Ace Ventura, Jim Carrey, net detector, or whatever. And then the next year comes out, plays the entire season, puts up similarly awesome numbers, well over 90% save percentage, low twos goals against average. And he wins the freaking Vezina Trophy. That's at a time when Dominik Hasek was winning it every year. He won the year before, the year afterwards. So Carrey now, at the age of 23... is the best goalie in the world. Next year, falls back to basically league average, 2.75 goals against, under 90% save percentage, and he gets traded to the Bruins. He's a disaster for the Bruins. He goes 5-13 for them. The following year, barely plays, and that's it. He's essentially out of the league by his 25th birthday. He's completely out of the NHL. So I think one of the things about if you're a great receiver and then you have a couple bad years, people keep taking a flyer on you because your fifth receiver has no impact on your team. But because hockey teams only carry two goalies, if your other goalie is in Chuck Knoblauch zone, right? If he's just totally unplayable for whatever reason, you can't roster someone who stinks. So yeah. You could send him to the minors, but that's it. He doesn't even go to the minors. He's basically retired at the age of 25, really at 24, because there's nowhere for him to go. There's no third string goalie.
He could have gone to Europe.
I mean, he wasn't good anymore. Like, he was objectively bad. I don't know if it was like a head thing. So, you know, people the kids nowadays have forgotten him. He wasn't a big prospect. He was a second round pick, came out of nowhere, great first year, wins the Vezina. Second year, seventh in Vezina's voting. So he's, you know, he has 2 years where he's an elite goalie and then never again. So Jim Carrey's my hockey guy. You've done three already, so let me give you one more.
Sure. Well, can I just tell you my hockey guy about whom I know nothing?
Sure.
And I did the same thing. I searched for players through age 25 who led the league, who had their most career point shares to that point, who are not Hall of Famers. And I came up with Ricky Martin. Living La Vida Loca, Rick Martin for the 1970s Buffalo Sabres was a first-team All-Star in 74, in 75, in 76, 77 through age 25. He was a first or second-team All-Star pretty much every year. And then after that age 25 season, he basically falls off a cliff. Seems like he had a lot of injuries. But yeah, number 11 all-time in goals per game average in NHL history. And can I just read you from his Wikipedia page?
Sure.
This is all I know. He's involved in one of the three most frightening injuries on Buffalo home ice. During a 77 game, Dave Farish of the Rangers hooked Martin around the neck from behind and kicked Martin's feet out from under him, causing Martin to hit his head on the ice. He was knocked unconscious and went into convulsions. After that play, helmets became a more common sight. In 1988, his career was dealt a further devastating blow in a game against the Washington Capitals. Martin was racing in on a breakaway. Capitals forward Ryan Walter tripped him. No penalty was called. Capitals goalie Mike Palmatier, already way out of his crease, knocked Martin back down by kicking his knee, causing severe cartilage damage that ended his career. So tough end for Ricky Martin, which is why even though he was really good in the first 6 years of his career, he's totally forgotten, basically.
Yeah, no, he's definitely forgotten.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's your whole list. I have three more guys to go.
No, I have baseball and basketball guys.
Oh, okay.
I'll follow your rules. Okay. Anyway, okay. So what's next?
So I had three baseball guys I wasn't able to pick. I'll pick one, but then I'll also tell you my.
No, give me all three. I gave you three football.
Okay,
guys.
Fine.
Give me three baseball guys.
So my most modern baseball guy is Phil Plantier. He's okay. He has one amazing year where he's a part-time player, plays about a third of the season for the Red Sox, and he hits .330 with 11 home runs and 148 at-bats. Has an 178 OPS plus. Just an amazing year. The next year, struggles, but it establishes himself after he gets traded to the Padres. At age 24, goes .240 with 60 walks, 34 homers, 100 RBI. He establishes himself basically as a star. Everyone's drafting him in fantasy baseball in 1994.
Was most definitely on steroids.
But he was a thick fellow.
Yeah.
and that's it, basically, for Plantier. The next year, he hits .220 before it was cool. And by 1995, he gets traded to the Astros. He has nine homers the whole year. Never again hits double digits. Hits 34 homers at the age of 24, 18 at 25, and in his prime at 26, 27, 28, never hits double digits. Despite getting tons of at bats, he goes in for the A's in 1996. It's .212 with seven homers in almost half the season. He's a complete disaster, totally out of baseball by age 28. So Phil Plantier, a true flameout. Didn't he? I believe he won. No, he didn't win Rookie of the Year because he didn't have rookie status that first year. But, you know, a guy who drove in 100 runs, hit 34 homers, was totally done. Going back a little bit in time, Johnny Gruff, born in 1926. He has a cup of coffee in 46, 47, 48 for the Tigers. In 48, he actually goes 8-for-17. So then 49, he stabbed himself. Okay, he's going to play. He hits .293. Again, he's a shortstop. .293 with 11 homers, 19 doubles, 5 triples. Has a .132 OPS plus, .878 OPS. He's established himself as a star. Gets a bunch of Rookie of the Year votes. He's a 2.5 win player. Then in his next year, he has the best year of his career, plays 157 games, hits 306 with 12 homers and 85 RBI. Again, shortstops didn't hit a lot of home runs in 1950, so this was a pretty big deal. His WAR is 3.2, and he is, at this point, if you were, you know, writing some sort of, like, future stars list, he's a 23-year-old shortstop with power, and you'd assume he's going to become an absolute superstar. And then he just never does anything again. In 51, he hits .299 with no power. And then after that, the batting average goes in addition to the fact that he stops hitting home runs. His prime season at 27, he has .275 with 7 home runs, despite playing almost the whole season for the White Sox. So he stuck around for a while, but was, you know, only on the merits of his first few years, because 58, 59, 60, he's washed up in his 30s. He goes back to the Tigers in his 30s, but it's not a happy reunion. So Johnny Groth, total flame out. And I'll meet you midway, because I had a modern guy and a guy from the 40s. In the late 70s, early 80s for the Oakland A's, Mitchell Page, totally forgotten. His rookie year, and he has an Edgar style, like rakes in the minors and gets to the major leagues late at the age of 25. He goes .307 with 21 homers, 75 RBIs, and 42 steals. Just a ridiculous rookie year. Actually does not win rookie of the year. Do you know who wins the 1977 AL rookie of the year?
Was it Mark Fidrich?
No, Eddie Murray. Eddie Murray.
Oh, okay.
Mitchell Page definitely deserved it. I mean, other than the fact that he only played 145 games, there is no reason why Eddie Murray won it over him. Eddie Murray was like a league average player. I mean, history was kind to Eddie Murray over Mitchell Page, but...
A lot, yeah.
So anyway, so Page, after his 42 steal with power and 78 walks, just a 926 OPS... He's a 6-win offensive player in his 6.1 WAR in his rookie year. Next year he goes .285 with 17 homers, and this is this maybe leads to, you know, points to some physical problems. He steals 23 bases but gets caught 19 times, meaning he shouldn't even be trying. The next year he steals 17, gets caught 16 times, which is one of the worst ratios I've ever seen of somebody who steals that much. But by that third year, he's hitting .247 with 9 home runs, playing an entire season, and he's well below. Replacement player. He's at negative .6 WAR in his prime 27 season. He hits .141 for the A's in 1981 in over 100 at bats.
Not great.
And that's basically it for Mitchell Page, who really nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
So those are my three baseball guys.
All right. Back in 2018, there was this young stud hitter and pitcher named Shohei Ohtani, who is no longer remembered.
Yeah.
No, I just feel like we got yelled at a lot for not discussing, like, free agency. Like, we have to mention what Shohei Ohtani's doing right now.
Well, it's funny because we were, like, the two most anti-Shohei Ohtani. We laughed that people were going to, like, draft him in fantasy. Like, he has zero value unless... And we were right. Like, if he's not Jacob DeGrom...
No, we still were. He still should be in the NL. He should be in the NL, but anyhow.
And, like, what exactly are you going to... Like you could obviously he's playable now. Like if you're playing fantasy baseball as the utilities slot.
All right. Well, there is a reason I brought him up because my baseball guy is a similar. You know, he's not Shohei Ohtani or Babe Ruth, but he pulled off something similar. By the way, if you sort of do the same search, which is search the most WAR through age 25 for guys who are not in the Hall of Fame, you're going to find guys like Doc Gooden and Fernando Valenzuela. But I don't think they really qualify here. Nobody has forgotten Doc Gooden, obviously, and nobody has forgotten Fernando Valenzuela, who lives in L.A.
But people have forgotten Ray Rice, according to you.
Yeah, no, but Smokey Joe Wood. I bet you most people have forgotten Smokey Joe Wood.
No, I think they either never knew him or they haven't forgotten him because he has a famous name.
But, okay, so tell me a single fact about Smokey Joe Wood without Googling him.
He was a good pitcher.
Okay, and you're basing that on the fact that his name is Smokey.
No,
so
I mean,
he had a fastball.
Yeah, am I wrong?
Well, okay, so Smokey Joe Wood burst onto the scene as an 18-year-old for the Boston Red Sox in 1908. Almost immediately, he becomes, probably the best or one of the best pitchers in baseball. In 1912, at the age of 22, can I give you his numbers?
Sure.
34 wins. That's 3 followed by 4. 34 wins. 35.
Right, that's a little late. Like this is not 1800s. 34 wins, which wasn't.
No, this is
These
numbers all led the league by.
Has anybody won 34 games since he won 34? Probably not, right?
No, okay. No. A 1.91 earned run average.
Okay, that's good.
This is a good season for a 22-year-old, by the way. That year, by the way, he had On September 6th, he faces off against Walter Johnson, who reportedly said, and Walter Johnson, who had like, you know, the first 100-mile-per-hour fastball, supposedly he once said that Smokey Joe threw faster than him. But they faced off against each other at the time. Wood had a 13-game winning streak. Johnson had a 16-game winning streak. And they was the best-selling baseball game of the year that year. And Wood gave up only two hits, and the Red Sox won 1-0. And then in the 1912 World Series, he faced John McGraw. And in Game 8, because there was 8 games in the World Series for some reason.
Yeah, that's the 9 that year.
Yeah, it was Smokey Joe against Christy Mathewson. And Smokey Joe comes in as a relief pitcher, actually. 8th inning, 9th inning, goes to the extras. And then this is the famous game of the Merkle Boner, I believe. Yeah. Is it not? Or was that earlier? Anyway, Smokey Joe, phenomenal season in 1912. Really, 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 really good. 34 wins, 191 ERA. He's on his way to being one of the
great
pitchers.
By the way, game 7 of that best of 9 series, because he's already had 2 wins. He allows 3 runs in a complete game, 11 strikeouts in game 1. Game 4 has a 1-run, 8 strikeout, no walk performance. So he's got 2 wins in the series. Trying to clean up in game 7, gives up 6 runs in the first inning, gets chased.
Yeah.
And then pitches. Yes.
But it comes back the next day.
The next day and pitches 3 innings.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, the next season, coming off that 34-win season, unfortunately, he slips on some wet grass fielding a bunt and breaks his thumb. Now, Smokey Joe is so good that he continues to pitch throughout that season and the next 2 seasons. And in fact, like by two years later, 1915, again, he leads the league in ERA at 149. He leads the league in winning percentage. The problem is, this is in an era when starting pitchers would pitch, you know, 40-plus games, 350 innings. And because of the injury, the problem was the pain would cause him to require significant recovery time. Mm-hmm. And so he's sort of like Shohei Ohtani. He could not be a member of a 4-man or even a 5-man rotation. So he was only pitching about 115 innings a season. And 115 innings of elite pitching wasn't that valuable in an era when, you know, starters were pitching 3 times that, and there was no such thing really as, you know, relief specialists. So he doesn't play again at all in 1916. He only plays a couple games in 1917, and his career is seemingly over. He gets sold to the Indians late in the 1917 season. But like his teammate Babe Ruth, at almost the exact same time, the next year in 1918, he decides, well, let me just try and come back as an outfielder and see what happens. And in 1918, his first season as an outfielder, he finishes in the top 10 in the league in batting average, home runs, RBIs, doubles, total bases. So immediately, instantly, he goes, and again, it's Shohei Ohtani-esque. He goes from the best pitcher in the league to not the best hitter. Certainly, he was no Babe Ruth, but a good hitter. But overall, to be honest, he was an above-average hitter, but nothing special. His career ends a couple years later. But I would argue that had he never slipped and hurt his thumb, he would be undoubtedly a Hall of Fame pitcher. And alternatively, had he been exclusively an outfielder from the beginning of his career, his counting stats would have been, you know, again, not a Hall of Famer, but he would have been better remembered. But because he's sort of half of one and half of the other, he's sort of you'd have to be a massive baseball.
Wait, so his second to last year, he hits 366, and then his last year, he hits 297 with almost 100 RBI. And why does he stop playing after 1922?
His heart was broken. He didn't want to be he didn't want to be an outfielder anymore. I don't know. I mean, he was 32, so he wasn't like, oh, you know,
yeah,
young.
But nobody ever retired, but like, just because.
Yeah, he had 150 hits in his last season. I don't know. Let's go to the Wikipedia page. Why did he finish his career? It doesn't really say. It just says he finished his career after the 1922 season. In his final season,
I guess it's not like in modern days. They're not walking away from $20 million. Like, I guess at a certain point, you could just leave.
Yeah, but I mean, he's an everyday player. Yeah, he has 92 RBIs, 150 hits. So, you know, he's solid. But yeah, so Smokey Joe, a super good pitcher, breaks his thumb, can't pitch anymore, and becomes an above-average outfielder. So a very unique player, and, you know, I think someone who should be better remembered. So pour it out for Smokey Joe.
Sorry, Smokey.
Yeah.
All right, so you have one sport left, right? You have basketball left?
Basketball, yeah.
So let me do basketball first, then you'll do basketball, and I'll do my other. Okay. 1978-79 season, a young point guard comes into the league for the Kansas City Royals, and he puts up 16 points a game. Kansas City Kings, excuse me. Puts up 16 points a game, 8.5 assists. Shoots 46% from the floor, and comes close to leading the league in steals. You'd say that's an absolute superstar, right? 16 points, 8.5 assists.
Sounds
great.
Great
steals, good shooter, free throw shooter, so the shooting should hold up. The next year, improves points, assists is close. You know, everything, the percentages are pretty similar.
By the way, I'm such a nerd, I think I know who you're talking about.
Who do you think I'm talking about?
UNC's Phil Ford?
Yeah, Phil Ford. Third year in the league has that is pretty bad. 17.5 points. In
Wait,
the 19-
but why is he on this list? He didn't drop off a cliff, did he?
Oh, yeah. Third year in the league, 17.5 points, a career high 8.8 assists, shoots 47.8% from the floor, and that's it. Never averages double digits again. 2 years later, he's already down. His assists have been halved. He stops hitting shots. That 82 season, he hits 43.7% from the floor. Gets traded to the Nets, the Bucks, the Rockets. Age 28, he plays a few games in the league, and then he's out. A guy who, when he was 22, was, you know, looking like an absolute, all-star player, is totally done.
I think, but because he has such a good college career, so we remember him better. Maybe that's why.
I think he's more known now, honestly, as like an assistant coach. He's been like a lot of places.
Here's the other problem. There's a lot of guys, you know, who put up big numbers for garbage teams. I mean, like Kansas City was garbage. Like, you know, Sharif Abdur-Rahim did that. So you can't really count those kinds of guys in basketball because there's so many of them, I think.
But he was just so good for 3 years. Like he's a top. He gets MVP votes 2 years in a row and then is out of the league.
I mean, I'm looking. His career high in win share is a 6.1.
He was a second team All NBA.
His career high in PER is 17.3.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a garbage player putting up numbers for a garbage team.
I mean, he was hitting shots, though. Like, he was efficient. He was stealing balls, so he's probably playing defense.
All right. Well, I mean, so, but what happened to him? But, like, he wasn't good. Like, to be good in basketball, you have to be a good player on a good team. You know, again, otherwise Sharif Abdur-Rahim qualifies, or even Elton Brand, who, you know, for most of his career. All right, so my basketball guy is, you know, when we discuss this idea, the obvious one that comes to mind is Derrick Rose.
Mm-hmm.
But he's too obvious, I think, right? Youngest MVP in the league and then, you know, falls off a cliff. Stephon Marbury is another possibility. But to me, I think he actually stuck around the league as a good player longer than people remember.
Okay.
In Stephon Marbury's ninth season in the league, ninth year in the league, he played all 82 games, put up 22-3-8 with a 22 PER.
Mm-hmm.
So Marbury was around too long. Another guy I thought of was Andrew Bynum, but my issue with Andrew Bynum is he was really more potential. Like, he only had one good actual season.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he was done for the league at age 26, but he was really, you know, you could really put him in more almost like the Greg Oden category, like a guy who had potential but never really proved it out.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy I want to talk about is Brandon Roy. Before we talk about Brandon Roy, we have to talk about the 2006 draft class. 2006, the first overall pick is Andrea Bargnani, who, you know, has, he's another guy who had a career, you know, scoring some points for some garbage teams. Number two pick, LaMarcus Aldridge, currently on your Spurs. Far and away the best player in this draft. He's had a good career. Number three, Adam Morrison, who we all remembered crying with his lame little mustache from Gonzaga. Do you know how bad Adam Morrison was in the NBA?
I mean, he was barely in it, yeah.
This is how bad he was. Adam Morrison, for his career, had negative 1.4 win shares. In the grand history of the National Basketball Association, at least back to the 1960s, I didn't look before that, there are only two players in history who were top three picks and had negative win shares. Len Bias obviously had none because he I don't know why I'm laughing about a guy who OD'd and died. But Len Bias had no win shares. But Adam Morrison, -1.4, and Chris Washburn in 1986 had -0.6.
Washburn, I believe, was a cocaine type guy, though.
Yeah.
He was a guy in John Lucas's house.
Yeah. But these guys are so bad. Like, Anthony Bennett had positive win shares, right?
But Morrison plays his rookie year and doesn't hit a shot the whole year, but like maybe he becomes a good player. But then he tears up his knee, and like he came back, but he couldn't move anymore.
Yeah, but he had multiple chances.
He couldn't move anymore. His knee was done.
Yeah,
but he was really bad as a rookie. Anyway, he played. He played 30 minutes a game. He shot
37%,
and he's not 6 foot eight. You should never shoot 37% when you're 6 foot eight.
Yeah, so he's not good. The next pick in that draft was Tyrus Thomas, who also, you know, pretty much a bust, though he had a couple moments. The next pick in that draft, Sheldon Williams, who at the time, I remember, the day of the draft, it made no sense why Atlanta took Sheldon Williams at where they took him.
Yeah.
People thought that they had, like, promised him or something. Anyways, after that, the very next pick is Brandon Roy by the Wolves, who immediately
would have been the best player in the draft.
Who's taken next. Yeah, so Brandon Roy is who I want to talk about. So Brandon Roy was, joins the Blazers and immediately becomes an all-star. And again,
wait, so the Blazers picked Roy and Aldridge in that round?
No, Aldridge was taken by the Bulls.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
And then he got traded also. So, yes, they acquired both of them. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was. When you acquire two All-Stars, you immediately, a 22-year-old, you immediately become a really good team. So Brandon Roy, age 23, 24, 25, an All-Star every year, putting up, 22, 5, and 5. The next Clyde Drexler, more or less, for the Blazers. and looks like he's going to be sort of, you know, like the next shooting guard, you know, after like Dwayne Wade or whatever and Kobe Bryant leave the scene. And then he gets injured in the 2010 season. And then, you know, he's basically never heard from again. He came David Kahn tried to give him a chance for the Timberwolves in 2013. He played 5 games and unfortunately couldn't play anymore. So he's completely done. He played 5 games after age 26. And Brandon Roy was a guy, you know, he would still be around. Again, like, look at his draft class. We still have LaMarcus Aldridge and we still have Rudy Gay also on your Spurs. But you look at the rest of that draft. Patrick O'Brien, Mohamed Sané. I mean, really a really bad draft. Cedric Simmons. These guys are Hilton Armstrong. These guys are all taken in the top 15.
I mean, Hilton Armstrong, I'm a UConn fan. Like, he wasn't good in college. It's crazy that he, you know,
yeah.
That was still when people drafted guys for size. Like, they didn't realize the NBA was moving the other direction. So you draft somebody who's 7 feet tall and who can move a little, but they have no use in the NBA.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you look at this draft, LaMarcus Aldridge, Paul Millsap in the second round is the second best player coming out of this draft, and Kyle Lowry, who was taken late in the first round. Those are the three sort of
Lowry
guys
better
who are
than
still
Lowry's
stars.
Had a better career than Millsap.
Yeah, well, they're pretty close, and Winshare's Millsap's ahead of him by a little bit. Millsap was always very underrated.
Yeah, but Millsap's career is almost done. Like, Lowry is the best player.
Well, Millsap
on
just signed a massive free agent contract last summer, so you know he was injured this year. But you know, let's.
But
see
his done. No, his key is like Lowry is the best player on a playoff team.
Yeah, well, let's,
Paul Millsap
let's see Lowry
is like
not
a guy in the NBA.
Let's see. First of all. Let's see Lowry not be complete garbage in the playoffs, number one. Number two, these are both free agents, so I wanted the Timberwolves to get this at past offseason. Millsap would be the best player on an all-star team, on a playoff team, if he wasn't injured.
By the way, there are three guys early. I'm a UConn fan. They get three guys picked in that draft. Hilton Armstrong, 12. Marcus Williams, the passing Marcus Williams, 22. And Josh Boone, 23. Like, who couldn't shoot in college? Like, it's shocking looking back. UConn was just so good back then that people assumed that their players would all be good, and those are just
Back then, the 1997 Gophers who went to the Final Four had four guys from that team. Well, I mean, no, six or seven guys from that team total played in the NBA, but four guys that year, seniors, all played in the NBA, including Trevor Winter, their backup center, played a few games for the Wolves. John Thomas, their center, who was garbage, was drafted in the first round, I think, by the Celtics, like 22. So back then, if you were on a team that went to the Final Four and you were decent, an NBA team would sort of shrug and say, yeah, we'll draft him, see what happens.
Yeah, and they had a fourth guy. They had Denim Brown, a Canadian guy who never even played in the league, picked you. And remember, one of my favorite picks, the Warriors picked ninth overall. They picked center Patrick O'Brien.
Yeah.
Reggie,
what did Bill Simmons call those people?
Reggie Cleveland All-Star.
Yeah, Reggie Cleveland All-Star for sure. Patrick O'Brien. Does not look like you think he would. So you have a non-basketball, you have a non-core four player to add to this.
Yeah, I'll give you, I mean, I could, there are 100 Olympics people I could give you. I'll just give you one. I'll narrow it down. I'll do summer and not winter. And I'll include a link to this because it's one of the coolest videos on YouTube. So the United States had never before or never since had somebody win the 10,000 meters in the Olympics. It's the only race I believe that they had never won. Other than the steeplechase, which they are finally good at now. You know why it's called the steeplechase?
I have no idea why.
Because they used to run that length, which is now like 3,000 meters. They used to run from like one church steeple to another. That would be the race. So that's why it's called the steeplechase. The way you make a U.S. Olympic team in track and field is you're one of the three fastest guys at U.S. trials. They basically have nationals, and even if you're the best guy in the world, you don't make the team unless you are one of the three fastest in that race. And it's, you know, viewed as like sometimes it's harder than the actual Olympics, depending on the discipline. So it's not a hard team to make because, again, they've never won a gold medal. They've never really contended for any medal. And this guy, Billy Mills, comes in second place behind a guy named Jerry Lindgren. But he's super far behind everyone, not considered a contender to win a medal. This is the 1964 Summer Olympics, and the favorite is the world record holder, a guy named Ron Clark from Australia. So they get to Tokyo, where the Olympics are. Billy Mills never at any point speaks to a reporter, has no conversation with any member of the media before the Olympics, gets on the track, and there used to be, the 10,000 meters is the longest race that's actually on the track, because the only thing longer than that is on a marathon, which is on the street. So you basically run around the track like 20 times.
Well, it finishes on the track.
Huh?
But yeah, they don't run around it. Yeah, it finishes
correct.
On the track.
Correct. It can finish. It doesn't. Yeah, it finishes in the Olympic Stadium right before the closing ceremonies, the men's race at least. But back then there was like 40 runners. So it's complete chaos on the track. And people are dropping out. 10,000 meters is a lot back then in 1964. This is 20 years before scientists even think a woman can physically run a marathon. I don't think women were running 10,000 meters yet. And so Billy Mills is up there with Clark, the favorite and the world record holder, and this guy, Mohamed Gamoudi from Tunisia. And eventually it's just the three of them. And as they're running, and you could see it in color with the broadcast on YouTube, and it's one of the great races ever run, and it's an amazing YouTube clip. They are running through traffic because there's people they have lapped now two and three times who are still on the track. And if this was like biathlon or cross country in the Olympics, like they make them get off the track because it makes for bad TV, because you don't know, like, wait, who's the person in first and who's the person in 87th who's like just in the picture because they're on the same track but behind. So they're literally running in traffic. The Tunisian guy throws a massive elbow to Billy Mills in the middle of a race. Just it's crazy. Like, throws him like it would be a technical foul in the NBA. And they keep running, and they're running through traffic. And finally, the Tunisian guy busts past the two, the Billy Mills, the American, and Ron Clark, the Australian favorite. And then as they're running through traffic, Billy Mills like comes out of nowhere. Somehow, in a half-hour race, gets this head full of steam and beats them to the race. And, like, you can see the Tunisian guy's, like, mouth ajar as he gets beaten. Like, who is this nobody who's beaten me? And then Billy Mills never runs in the Olympics again, never does anything on the field. He becomes, like, a famous person off the field, but never does anything before or after. But for one day, you know, wins the 10,000 meters, which the United States has still never won before or after. So he's my flame out, Billy Mills.
Truly forgotten.
Well, no, Olympics people, like a real Olympics fan would hear this, like, oh yeah, that's like too obvious of a pick. But the announcer goes so crazy, he goes like Gus Johnson crazy. But unlike nowadays, where it would be like celebrated on Twitter, he gets fired for like being too excited about Billy Mills winning. NBC fires the announcer for like yelling. And yeah, he never does anything again. So that's my pick, Billy Mills. All right, so my team is Billy Mills, Phil Plantier, Jim Carrey, John Jefferson, and Phil Ford. And what's your team?
I don't know. I was deleting the guys from my list as I was
saying. All right. We'll put
What am I, my team? All right. I had Smokey Joe Wood was my baseball player, right? Larry Brown and Ernie Eisenhower, Larry Eisenhower were my football players. Mm-hmm. Who else did I have? My basketball player was Brandon Roy.
Okay. Very unknown.
And my hockey player
Ray Rice,
was Rick Martin. And Ray Rice and Rick Martin, yeah.
Right. So I think, we didn't totally do different things, but I tried to have people who weren't super famous. The average person listening to this podcast would remember Jim Carrey, but maybe they hadn't thought about him in a few years. But like Ray Rice and Brandon Roy were a little too famous, in my opinion, for this list.
Okay, I mean, again, I thought Derrick Rose is like the ideal example of a
sure, but yeah, so no, but I that would be a ridiculous example. Like someone who is still active in the NBA would be an insane example.
I wish he wasn't active. Trust me.
I hope he plays 48 minutes. So let's talk. Yeah, fine. Let's talk NBA for a minute. So
did you see my tweets at 4 a.m. when I came up?
Oh, that's what you were working on. So I think
Very exciting the next couple days in the Western
Conference. Spurs are almost certainly going to win tonight, but then they'll probably lose in New Orleans. What seed will that give them?
Well, I mean, there's so many moving
pieces.
Well,
wait, how about this?
Right?
Let me ask you a question, because we have teams in very similar spots right now. The seed I want is the sixth seed. I'm very certain that the Spurs would... Their best chance to win a series would be against Portland, who I think... I'm obviously assuming they're not going to have
Corey. Why would you rather the 6 over the 4 or 5?
I think that Utah is playing better than Portland right now.
Okay, it's possible.
I mean, we just smacked Portland, and they were trying.
Yeah,
Lillard played the
whole game. You won the season series against Portland, whereas Utah beat you 3 out of 4.
Yeah, we smacked Portland. Lillard was playing the whole game. McCollum was playing the whole game. Like, they don't have...
The interesting... The Timberwolves won the season series against every single team in the Western Conference playoff race other than the Spurs, who they lost 2-1.
You must have lost every game against the East the whole season, that means.
Yeah, the Timberwolves had an abysmal record against, which doesn't make sense because the East is such garbage, but the Timberwolves struggled against the East all
year.
Now,
your last game is in Denver, right? That could be make or break.
No, it's at home.
Oh, it's at home?
It's at home.
Are you nervous about that game, or you think they're going to beat Denver?
Of course I'm nervous about that game. Okay, they're playing Memphis at home tonight. That has to be a win, although we lost at home against Memphis just last week.
I mean, Memphis is trying harder to lose than you are to win, so.
Oh, they were. They sat Gasol on the bench the whole game, and they won that game. I mean, it was deeply embarrassing. Mm-hmm. If the Wolves lose to Memphis at home again,
but you don't deserve. Lose to Memphis in this race, you don't deserve to make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They don't deserve it already because they lost them last week at home. Although then Memphis went into Oklahoma City. Oh, no, it was at home, I think. Memphis won.
The annoying thing about this is that Golden State and Houston are not close to each other, and they're not trying. So, like, it's the teams that have Golden State and Houston these last 2 weeks, it's a massive schedule advantage.
Houston's not playing anybody right now. Golden State is playing Utah, though. So, that's a good win for Utah, hopefully.
I'm saying, but also it's like you have three or four games all year. Per year against both those teams, and those are the games on your schedule. Like, oh, we're probably not going to win that, and then you magically win it because of it's a schedule win, and you know.
Well, Golden State has been bad for the last two months, like since the All-Star break. Honestly, they've been a 500 team. So the way I have it predicted right now is I have Minnesota, New Orleans, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, a four-way tie for the 5, 6, 7, 8 seed. They'll all be 47-35. We saw this a couple years ago in the East where there were four teams, I think, all at 48-34. Like Charlotte was one and Miami was one.
Do you know the tiebreakers or no?
Yeah. So the tiebreaker, if you have multiple teams, the tiebreaker is best win-loss percentage among all those teams. So if that was the case, Minnesota would be the 5 seed because they have the best record. Yeah. And then New Orleans and San Antonio were tied, but New Orleans won the head-to-head against San Antonio. So New Orleans would be the 6 seed. San Antonio would be the 7 seed, and Oklahoma City would be the 8
seed. So the Spurs are actually going to try. Because I think if the Spurs could get the 6 by losing the last game, I think they would actually rest people. But I don't think they're...
There's no way they'll know that because simultaneously there's all these...
Well, unless New Orleans loses the next game, then it's possible. But yeah.
No, because you're also in a tiebreaker with Minnesota, Oklahoma City, Denver, right? If Denver wins their last two games, and Denver's in the playoffs,
right? But then you guys aren't in.
Would
you rather play if you have the 7 or 8? Would you rather play Houston or Golden State round one?
Of course, I would rather play Golden State. They don't have Curry. The Timberwolves have zero chance against Houston.
I think I'd rather play Houston
than Golden State sans Curry. That's nuts.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think next week will probably be our NBA playoff preview.
All right, so let's save
it. I think the Rockets are winning it all, but for sure, if Curry's out, I don't think there's a question.
I mean, the East is so bad. It's really upsetting. They should let Golden State go to the East for this playoffs.
Yeah, well, I mean, they should be reseeding forever, but that's...
It's crazy.
Issue.
It's really getting more crazy. You know, I was talking to an older guy, not that old, but like a guy who was like, yeah, I was at the Rangers Stanley Cup loss in whatever it was, the early 80s. I'm like, oh, who'd they play? He's like, the Canadiens. And I had forgotten that they used to reseed, you know, based without conferences in the NHL, so you could have a Canadiens Rangers Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, what's best case scenario? Like the corpse of the Cavs getting swept by Houston or Golden State? Like, this is obviously the worst Cavs team. Yeah, LeBron could put up 40, 15, and 15 every game in the NBA Finals, and they'll still get swept.
Yeah, and then some clown like we'll get like Andre Iguodala will get the MVP instead of him.
Yeah, there's no chance where I don't think there's a chance that the Eastern Conference team wins a game.
Yeah, I mean Boston is obviously done without Kyrie. Toronto.
I did think Boston with Kyrie would. They obviously weren't going to win, but they could make every game competitive with Kyrie.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron is still, because he's LeBron, it's still, if not competitive.
I mean, I think Philly, like, would lose 4 close games. Like, Philly's not going to get blown out by those teams, but they're also
in
not
the NBA Finals, you mean?
Would be wild. Look, there are so few, like, Toronto's not interesting to me. This is the same Toronto team a million times. They happen to take advantage of a ridiculously weak conference. They're 19-11 against the West. That's fine, but that's not, championship material. Philly, that's the one story that could be interesting. I mean, if you want to see LeBron for the 800th time, that might be interesting to you. But like,
well, I mean, yeah, I always want to see LeBron.
Boston without their
the
two best players,
player all time.
Toronto, I don't even know like who else there could be, like the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the NBA until the Houston Golden State Western Conference Finals, there's not going to be a lot of drama in the NBA.
I'm not even nervous. I don't want the Spurs to miss the playoffs. Like, I think it would be lame to miss a streak, but like. The Spurs are in a position where they've never been before where I know that they have 0% chance, literally a 0% chance of winning the finals or even getting to the finals. And that's that weird Atlanta Hawks purgatory. That's not fun. Like, the individual games are fun, but there's not a lot of pressure. Like, I know, unless Kawhi comes back and is somehow healthy, but the odds of that at this point seem
zero. What's happening with Kawhi? I mean, it's actually, so in our NBA Survivor Pool, I was trying to figure out whether I should take San Antonio or Cleveland.
Yeah, everyone was probably figuring that out today.
Yeah, and what I was thinking about is, well, which one would I rather save for next season?
Right.
And I thought, well, there's a chance that Cleveland LeBron leaves and Cleveland's completely worthless.
Look, right, there's a very good chance that Cleveland's worthless next year. But even if Kawhi leaves, the Spurs are pickable. No, even without Kawhi, they're not trading him for nothing. Like, they would rather keep...
Do you think you've seen the last Kawhi?
No. Do you know the contract the Spurs can give Kawhi in 2 months? It literally, the last year of the contract that they can give him in June is $50 million for 2024. How is he turning that down?
Yeah.
They can literally make him the highest paid athlete in American sports history.
Well, by 2024, that would be.
Sure. Yeah. But like the minute he signs it, like that, he has a record. Like,
yeah.
It's a $207 million contract for 5 years.
I don't think the money is determinative with his conflict. I have no idea what his conflict with the Spurs is about.
I don't think he has a conflict. He literally cannot play because he's injured. He's back in New York rehabbing.
The only people who think that are you and Kawhi. So
he
all his teammates.
I think he can play. I think he's not willing to play because he's not 100%. But I don't think he has an issue with the Spurs that will prevent him from being able to play long term. I think 100% he will.
I don't want to see him leave.
I think 100. It'll ruin basketball in San Antonio. But unless they make a really good trade.
Oh, boo hoo. You'll only. Yeah. You're like.
Our 30-year run will be over.
How many championships? Yeah.
Five.
That's really tough.
I think he will be there opening day next season. I mean, he'll probably be injured again, but he'll be on the roster. Do you want to say. I like international basketball. I know nobody else cares. But they released the 35 guys who are going to be on the. Who are on like the Olympic/World Cup team for this year. Do you want to hear the underwhelming World Cup team that I think they will probably have? Like, tell me if you think this team can win an international championship. I have 13 guys, so they bring 12. I'm assuming that nobody who makes the finals, you know, or even the conference finals will go because that's generally been what happened. And plus, like, LeBron is not going to Tokyo for the World Championships. Like,
yeah. Is Kat switching over or is he staying?
Kat is not on the – Kat and Embiid are not – well, Embiid I don't even think he's a citizen. But Kat and Embiid are not on the roster. So he –
yeah, you can't just list – oh, Giannis. Okay, we can't just list good NBA players.
No, well, Embiid doesn't – the thing is Embiid doesn't – like he's connected to Cameroon, but he hasn't said he's playing for Cameroon. It's not like Evan Fournier where it's like, all right, he's French. Like it's a guy who doesn't necessarily have a country. Hakeem played for the U.S. Like anybody can. Tim Duncan played for the U.S.
Yeah.
Here's who I have. Yeah. Harrison Barnes, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Drummond, Eric Gordon, Tobias Harris, C.J. McCollum, Chris Middleton, Oladipo, Kemba, Miles Turner, John Wall, who is a stretch, I think. And, John Wall probably won't play. And DeAndre Jordan. I don't even know if that team
can Miles Turner has been so bad this year.
Who? DeAndre?
God, well, Miles Turner.
So bad compared to, like, people thought he was going to become a star. You traded Antonio Brown.
No, bad by any standard. He's been a bad player this year.
Yeah. Well, there aren't a lot of good American big men, which is generally a problem.
Yeah.
And the ones who are have a fatal flaw, like Andre Drummond, who's just 40% from the free throw line.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Andre Drummond can't play internationally, for sure.
Well, he can absolutely dominate. He just, like, you'll foul him every time.
Yeah, so I was thinking, actually. So I was in Israel for Passover, and we were praying in a converted basketball court. And so I was, like, standing, like, throughout prayers for a week in the extended free throw line.
It was an outdoor synagogue?
No, it was
indoors. Okay, fine, yeah.
But I'm sure this is a Wikipedia-able answer, but like, why is it that we invent a game, we design the court, and then the rest of the world just decides, no, the free throw line is not going to be straight. It's going to like edge out right near the basket.
Three-point
line? Why did that happen? No, the free throw line, the paint.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And why do we listen to them? Like, why do we agree to play by FIBA rules?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why are they making up the rules for our game? It makes no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. I think, Tim Duncan was right. FIBA sucks.
All right, this podcast has been going in a lot of strange places, but we had a highlight. We had some good jokes from your daughter. We talked about some athletes that nobody else has ever heard of.
Yeah, let us know if you want more of this. I mean, we could also, this was not that prepared. Like, we could actually prepare and do things like this in the future.
Yeah, this is the first guestless podcast in like over a month also. Oh, no, we had your daughter as a guest.
Yeah, Ella Wienerker.
We had a guest.
Big guest. Next time, she's got to bring better chips.
Featuring Ella Wienerker.
She had told that once. She's like, I'm going to tell her on the podcast. I'm like, no, you're not. And then she literally burst in.
Ella, we need a tight five. Tell her if she wants to come back on.
She needs tight five jokes. And she literally like forgot.
She's not welcome.
I laughed when she told those four jokes, but she told them like
in
succession. And I even said like, write them down if you're ever going to do them. And then she just burst into the room and decided to come in unprepared to do them.
Yeah, and then there was another kid also.
I think there's one of the other ones. But let's...
All right. Keep talking. Bye. Bye.